Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris. You're Alec Whipple. Spring training is just hours away at this point. And we are going to do one of our classic off-season draft slash remember some guys slash talk about teams that are not this year's team episodes. But before that, Whipple, how are you doing?
I mean, spring training is tomorrow. Valentine's Day tomorrow, and I'm sure we all have plans watching the Aaron Boone press conference at 1 o'clock.
But
Brian Cash press conference on Thursday at 3 o'clock. I should just go work for the Yes Network at this point. I mean, I'm that excited. I feel like spring training is always cleansing. It's always fun to be excited for a new season. But
hope springs eternal.
I would say of the seasons that we have collectively been excited for, i.e., we've had a podcast for. This might be the most exciting. I mean, no pandemic, no lockout, one Juan Soto. Like, that's plus, you know, that's some positive
I think
karma.
That's plus three.
Plus three. I'm excited. I'm really excited. And what better way to kick off the season than by talking about random stuff for an hour? Because that's what we do best here.
Yeah. So we've done a Remember Some Guys podcast. We've done a...
It was like the bench draft. Like, we specifically built a team of like the most random dudes.
Yeah, which was awesome. We did like best games of the year. We like to do this stuff. And this is one of my favorite ones yet, which is weirdest moments since, or our favorite weird moments since 2009. And weird moments kind of just means whatever we decide that weird moments means. And we're going to get right into it. Whipple got the first pick and also stole a number of my picks in our preparation for this. But I'm very happy with my list. I don't want anyone or anything on my list to construe this as me not being happy with them. I love them as if they were my own children. Whipple, what is your first pick?
So when we first had the idea for the weird moments draft, I mean, I think it came from that randomness of baseball, the moments when you're just like, what is this, a sport, or is this just like some guys being weird on a field? Like, there's some really crazy stuff that happens in baseball. I think there's like that category. There's also the category of like, this is like so wild and like the circumstances make this so improbable. That's also kind of like, wow, that was really weird. Sometimes it's like a game that's weird. I mean, you watch like a weird result. Sure. You're like, how could that ever happen? And I feel like when we're looking at the last 15 years, kind of the new Yankee Stadium era, we can call it, there's really one play that kind of takes the randomness of baseball, the crazy game, the just like guys being weird on a field, like you can't explain this stuff, and puts it into one compact result. One squeeze of a glove that may or may not include a ball inside the glove. So for context, if you don't know about Luis Castillo dropping the ball, I doubt your status as a fan, because some people might talk about like the Babe, Mickey Mantle, DiMaggio, the hierarchy of Yankees baseball. I would say Luis Castillo dropping the ball is like every new fan should watch this game, partly because it was a really good game. I think, actually, funny story, when I was little, I would, and this is kind of dating myself now, I would buy games on my iPod and like rewatch the game. Did you ever do that, or was I crazy? Like,
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I was spending my parents' money on like $5 buying a Yankees game, and then like, or maybe
so
it was,
you
like,
would basically episode. Curate your own Yankees classics, but without kind of. John Sterling skipping two innings and talking in the middle.
Yes, it was. You could buy him like an episode of a TV show, and I bought the Aaron Boone game. I think I bought both games in that series, like when Pedro charged Zimmer, or Zimmer charged Pedro and Boone. I bought some like other 2009 game, I kind of forget what, and I bought this game, and objectively it holds up. The game was Subway Series June, kind of. I mean there were contextual factors that made it an important game. I think the Yankees had lost a bunch of the Red Sox before, the Mets were kind of floundering as well, and
the Yankees I think had not beaten the Red Sox to that point.
Right,
that year
it was coming off their sweep in their 0-8 or 0-9 record to that point. But the game was back and forth before the ninth inning, which constitutes the weird moment. I mean, we had the Yankees taking a lead 1-0, the Mets coming back and taking a 2-1 lead, Yankees taking a 3-2 lead, Mets taking a 6-3 lead, Yankees taking a 7-6 lead. And then in the eighth inning, you had the Mets taking a 8-7 lead off of Mariano Rivera. So you had, this was already like a crazy game, you know, Cano homer, Jeter homer, you had a Gary Sheffield on the Mets homer. And weird, you know, a lot of random stuff. The point of this is not to talk about the game because we're talking about the weird moment. And so in the ninth inning, the Yankees are down 9-8. You had Francisco Rodriguez come in, the star new closer of the Mets, coming off setting the single season saves record. And you had Gardner fouling it to the catcher, Jeter singles, Damon strikes out, Jeter's on second. Okay, so like you have the tying run on second, pretty classic, dramatic ninth inning. You have Teixeira coming up. Teixeira, by that point, is really starting to heat up as a Yankee. So K-Rod walks Teixeira to get to A-Rod. And A-Rod, you know, some guys get intentionally walked. They think that's a slight. Maybe A-Rod would have been mad enough to hit a ball over the fence. And that probably, that might have made like the greatest games of the last 15 years list. But instead, A-Rod pops up to second base. And
let's watch what happens after that.
99% of games, it's over.
3-1. Popped up. Castillo. Dropped the ball. He dropped the ball. Here comes Teixeira. And the Yankees win. Oh, my goodness. He dropped the ball.
So
Michael Kay, say he dropped the ball more times challenge.
Like, I remember watching this and turning away from the TV, because when in your life are you going to expect that a game ending pop up turns into a game winning pop up? And
Whipple,
I
best not start giving credence to the just put the ball in play, maybe something good will happen crowd.
If you're giving credence to that crowd, I think even they would agree a pop-up, an infield, basically infield pop-up was about the lowest outcome, you know,
improbable.
I mean, you had Mark Teixeira sprinting, you know, on all four of his hooves as he's a horse. Like to get around to score on that play, you know, the game result was crazy, but I just want to focus on the moment, because that single moment of just like, the game is over. All you have to do is to beat your rivals on the road in a Subway Series is catch the easiest ball in baseball. I mean, like, I think it's harder to overthrow a throw to first. Like, I think it's harder to catch, like, maybe a line drive in the outfield. An infield pop-up, I think either one of us would at least have a decent chance of catching it. And we're nowhere near the standard of baseball players. But turning that loss or that win for the Mets into a loss, I just think it was the craziest, weirdest, like wildest single outcome, single moment. I mean, we've seen other drop pop-ups. We've seen other crazy plays, but like with all those factors to align like that and like Friday night Subway Series, I just don't know how it gets better than that in terms of weird moments. I will always remember this. And I think it's just, it deserves its place at the top.
It does. You're exactly right. You texted me the other day and you said, I think there's a clear number one pick. And I agree with you. I don't think anything else makes sense to draft in that spot. I think my picks are probably a little more niche than the ones that you went with, which is fine. I think that's kind of par for the course. But if I had the number one pick, it would have been on my list too.
And Luis Castillo says, I feel so bad. The ball was moving a little bit. And I'm like... You're an infielder. Like
in fairness to him, the ball was moving more than a little bit. It went way up in the air. It went like, you know, more than 100 feet away from home plate. It, you know, was probably tailing. Who's to say? But Luis Castillo probably thinks he should have caught that ball, I would say.
I like Jerry Manuel's quote. We'll have to fight through this. This is definitely a tremendous test for us. Will be a battle not only for him but for us as well. He's like, I fully know that like the fans are gonna kill us, like absolutely kill us.
It's a tremendous test.
That's makes it even funnier. But yeah, I think you're right. This was the clear number one pick.
So prior or in your description of that moment, you mentioned contextual factors. And my first pick is weird because of contextual factors. So imagine for a moment that it's the year 2020, a year that you experienced. So it's probably easy for you to imagine it. Imagine that baseball, Major League Baseball, is being played, but it's a shortened 60-game season, and teams are only playing the other teams in their division and the corresponding division in the other league. And imagine that teams are playing doubleheaders, and doubleheaders are only 7 innings. And imagine that sometimes, because of missed games and rescheduled games and things like that, a team can be wearing its home uniform, playing in its home park, and still be the away team. Can you imagine all that?
I wish I could, but 2020.
I wish you could too.
Wasn't real, right?
Yeah, that honestly, this felt like a dream. So I have another thing for you to imagine, which is imagine you are a two-time All-Star catcher coming off of a phenomenal season in which you hit 34 home runs and were a key factor in leading your team to the American League Championship Series. And imagine that to this point in the season, you are having a terrible time. You're hitting 124, 245, 321 for a 566 OPS coming into this game. You have lost a lot of playing time to Kyle Higashioka, who has come on surprisingly strong and had kind of the good offensive stretch of his career. But here you are, pinch hitting with the bases loaded in the top of the eighth inning, which is also the last inning, and you're hitting in the top of the inning in your home stadium, even though you're the away team. And it's all just a whole weird thing. And you're having this terrible season, but you come up and you do this.
Driven deep to left center field. Going back, McNeil looking up. See ya. Oh, did he need that? A huge pinch hit grand slam for Gary Sanchez. And the Yankees lead 5-1.
Like the clang.
Completely absurd.
The bleachers. Like,
yeah, you don't normally get to hear that. So I remember I don't remember watching that moment. I remember listening to that moment. I was driving on, it was either Route 9 or 84 West in Connecticut. I was coming from the beach back home, and I was listening to John Sterling call it on the radio, and Gary hits the grand slam, and it must have been before the ball had landed that I yelled out to Siri to call Matt Harris to just scream about Matt Harris, shout out, friend of the pod, former guest, to just scream about Gary Sanchez doing that. I probably almost crashed the car just out of like pure elation at what had been going on. But yeah, first of all, to be in that situation, empty stadium, shortened season, playing in your home stadium as the away team, the eighth inning is the last inning of the game, and you're not the home team, so this isn't a walk-off, but it feels like it should be. To be in that situation is weird enough. And for Gary Sanchez, who was like the worst player in the world that year, to come up and hit that grand slam, completely ridiculous. I don't think we'll ever see something like that again. I hope we never see something like that again. So to me, that was a pretty easy number one pick for me to make.
Yeah, there's just like so many little moments of that clip, like the clang of the bleachers, the mm-hmm. Yankees pinstripe mask, the just like imagining what that would be like in an actual stadium, and then just like kind of having like, you know, 1/10 of that emotion. And I mean, I think it's such a good moment. I had mentioned to you that something similar was on my list, and I want to shout out, maybe you won't even talk about it. I think Yankees Mets regular season in 2020 is like tied, if not leading, in like the weirdest regular season series between two teams. I mean, was it Rosario walk off? It was the
Rosario walk off for the Mets at Yankee Stadium. Right. Then you had two Yankees walk-offs in a row, including one on a Dellin Betances wild pitch, and the other was that 8-7 game where I think didn't Tyler Wade homer yeah. in that game?
It was like the most improbable comeback I think everyone
yeah, the Yankees seen. The Yankees no were down there. The Yankees They're were down 7-2 in the bottom of the seventh inning. The seventh inning was the last inning. Luke Voit hit a two-run single off Jared Hughes. Yes, with two outs. Luke Voit hit a two-run single off Jared Hughes. Aaron Hicks comes up. Edwin Diaz throws a wild pitch that scores Tyro Estrada. Now it's 7-5. Hicks then hits a home run. Now it's tied. So the Yankees have done a five-run comeback in the span of three batters. And then Urshela ultimately got the walk-off hit to score Mike Tauchman in the bottom of the eighth inning, which, of course, was the first extra inning. That was an insane series. But yeah, three walk-offs in a row, all at Yankee Stadium, only two of them by the Yankees, and then followed up with that Gary Grand Slam game. Ridiculous.
And Pete, the one game played at Citi Field, Pete Alonso had a walk-off two-run home run. So you had
opponents
galore, six games, like four walk-offs, the Gary home run. I mean, that I just like can't remember. I'm maybe it's there, but like given the context of 2020, I think that might be like weirdest series of like ever or season series.
Yeah, that it really did not make any sense as far as I can. Yeah, it was super weird.
That's baseball, Susan.
That is baseball, Susan. Is this a snake draft or are you doing your next pick?
You could do it. Let's just go back and forth.
Okay, go ahead.
So my next pick is, I guess I got to do the reason that I've made my tagline, my subheader here. The Melchizedek Melky Mesa fan club was born on the day that our man made his major league debut, which also happened to be the day that the Yankees and the Athletics were playing some pretty serious September baseball. I mean, you know, I love some good 2012 Yankees content and
you sure my do. Pick.
Come from that esteemed team. But for this specific one, I remember this game was, I think Russell Martin hit a home run, walk-off home run the night before. The Yankees and the Orioles were going back and forth. I mean, this was, you know, Saturday baseball, Yankees and A's right now is like a sleeper, you know, a laugher. But like this was very, very intense at the time. And the Yankees were, they took it to extra innings, I think, at the seventh inning. So seventh inning, the game was tied up. The action happened in the later innings, but the first innings were a few back and forth, you know, some home runs, Stephen Drew homering for the A's, Raul Ibanez, a little precursor of what was to come. So seventh inning goes by, they're tied 5-5. The game is scoreless until the 13th. And I remember Freddy Garcia was pitching out of the bullpen. This is like late Yankees Freddy Garcia. He was clearly like done and he was just in there to kind of eat innings. And then when he was done because Johnny Gomes homered, Yoenis Cespedes homered, Chris Carter homered. It's 9-5 down four runs after innings.
The Cespedes and Chris Carter homers were absolute bombs too. Like, I remember just being like, right-handed batters do not hit balls to those places at this stadium.
Yeah, it was like you just thought this was over. I mean,
and
it
suddenly it's 8-5 in the 13th inning.
9-5 in the 13th inning. So 9-5 in the 13th inning. And then the Yankees have a miraculous comeback, which Raul Ibanez being September 2012 was at the center of. You had Ichiro scoring on a wild pitch. You had Eduardo Nunez hitting a sac fly, and then Ibanez hitting probably, I'd say, one of the first of his legendary series of home runs. And suddenly the Yankees are back in it, and it's 9-9. You're going to the 14th inning. I mean, these games are so important at this point. And in the 14th inning, Corey Wade's pitching. Corey Wade throws a 1-2-3 inning. Eric Chavez leads off the bottom of the 14th. So now you're in business.
Whipple, who was pinch running for Eric Chavez?
Wait, I'm sure. What was Eric Chavez's nickname? E-Rod.
Yeah, that's what A-Rod calls him. E-Rod.
Eric Chavez
didn't know that.
Eric Chavez did not know. He was A-Rod's one of the substitute third basemen. He was
Do you ever miss E-Rod when he's out there?
Yeah, me too. So E-Rod gets pinch run for, sorry to everyone who doesn't get that, which is probably everyone.
Nobody gets that.
E-Rod is pinch run for by young Yankees outfield prospect making his major league debut, who was signed as an international free agent in 2003. So like,
yeah, dude,
been around for a while. He's finally in the big leagues. He's been up for 12 days, but Melky Mesa comes into the game to pinch run for Eric Chavez. So Ichiro's intentionally walked to pitch to A-Rod again. And A-Rod's at the center of all these moments. So you have first and second. Melky Mesa's the go-ahead run in a big September game. And A-Rod comes through in the clutch, single to center, except the game did not end at that point. And I don't know if you want that.
And the 0-1. Line drive, base hit to center field. Here comes Mesa. He misses third base. He's got to hold up. He missed third base. He was coming home with a winning run, and he missed the bag.
Okay. I love Michael Kay's call. It's just like, he missed third base. Like, he did
he
it.
Did.
You got to get that base. You got to get all of them.
It is. Touching them all is important.
So I think if that moment had gone differently, if the inning had gone differently, if the game had gone differently, this would not be remembered in a celebratory manner. Because and your first major league pinch running appearance, to do that with the game with those stakes, that's pretty bad. And Melky Mesa would have been, I think, again, given how close this division race was, I mean, it would have been bad, like very, very bad for him in New York sports media. And I don't know, he didn't have a major league career, but, you know, he wouldn't even have had a chance at that one. We'll be dramatic and say that. And when Cano came up and grounded on a fielder's choice to the pitcher, got Mesa at home. I mean, I think everyone was like, this is a catastrophe. Like, you're going to go to a 15th.
It was really bad.
You have no bullpen left. And thankfully, the game ended in weird and wild fashion. Eduardo Nunez being safe at first by an error by Brandon Moss. Ichiro scores, and immediately the Yankees win. All is forgiven. You know, they're hugging Mesa, but to miss third base, I mean, he kind of became a cult hero, I think, among the Yankees commenters and blog, you know, the denizens of blog world for that time. Just because, like, that was such a wild thing to happen in his literally first major league game. And he never really did anything in the majors, but that's always going to be with him. You were reading some of his baseball prospectus scouting reports. I, in my previous blog, wrote an article about him the next year about him next potentially being like the Yankees backup outfielder. But that, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for us, that would go down as his career highlight. And to miss third base in that moment in your first major league game, I mean, I think he was very happy and very relieved that they won.
Yeah, and that game was just ridiculous, and the Melky Mesa of it all only made it crazier. So I too am going to pick a moment from a ridiculously long game that the Yankees ended up winning, and it's also going to be a base running moment. So this is appropriate. You set this up well. It's 2017, it's the middle of July, and the Yankees are playing the Red Sox at Fenway Park. The Yankees are utterly dominated by Chris Sale throughout almost the entire game, which overshadows a gem by Luis Severino, who went 7 innings, allowing only 1 run. The Yankees are down 1-0 going into the 9th inning, and Matt Holliday comes up to face Craig Kimbrell, who has allowed just 1 home run to a right-handed batter all year. Holliday goes yard, hits a solo homer to tie it, and the game is 1-1. It remains 1-1 until the 16th inning when the Yankees ultimately win. But my play is not from the 16th inning. And it really, as weird as it was and as worked up as people got about it, was not a consequential play in the game. It was just one of the more unusual things I've ever seen.
8-2-2. Chopper to first. Moreland down to second. Got the out back to first base. That one kicked by Jacoby Ellsbury, I believe. Jacoby Ellsbury, I think, kicked that ball.
What is Holiday doing?
Holiday's out.
What is Holiday doing? Holiday's out. So Jacoby Ellsbury grounds into what should be a double play, just a normal routine double play with Matt Holiday running from first to second. When you watch the replay, it looks like maybe Holiday thinks that Moreland, who's playing first base, caught the ball on the fly, and that's why he runs back to first base. But that wouldn't make sense because Moreland would not then have thrown the ball to second. So who knows what Matt Holiday was doing? Maybe he came up with a novel strategy to break up a double play, which is just run back to first base. Then the guy's going to have trouble covering the bag and Jacoby Ellsbury can just run in safely. It was so weird. John Farrell got mad because of course he got mad because why are they allowed to do that? Ellsbury probably would have been out. Like, it didn't make any sense. Ultimately, nothing else happened in the 11th inning. Like, Headley came up, lined out. Gregorius came up, lined out. So nothing mattered, but they reviewed it. They upheld the original call, which was Holiday's out at second, Ellsbury's safe at first. And then that was just kind of like it. And it was just like, I think it went on for 9 minutes as it was happening at the time. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Like, sometimes you get the play where two guys end up on the same base, but normally, both those guys are like, normally one of those guys hasn't gotten out yet. And that was a major distinguishing factor in this case. So when we started talking about weird moments, this was one of the first things that came to mind, was like, just what was Matt Holiday doing or thinking? And is this a strategy that's underused in Major League Baseball?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was thinking. Like, why aren't more people doing this? I think of, like, you know, the new innovative strategy of like running through second to try to like double play, and everyone's like, oh, it's gonna catch on. Well, why isn't that caught on? And clearly the umpire said he was safe. I mean, maybe, you know, they're worried about a different ruling if it came up again, but like, this isn't like a court case. I mean, just like, just go for it, right? Like,
yeah,
I feel like with this needs to be talked about more. You need to send this to Tanner Swanson and everyone else who follows us.
You know what this is actually a lot like? Remember in the 2021, what would that have been? The division series between the Red Sox and the Rays, when Hunter Renfroe just like bopped the ball over the fence and they were like, oh, it's ruling was very favorable to the Red Sox. I forget exactly the particulars, but like the way it was ruled suggested that like anyone who doesn't think they can make a play throwing the ball back in should just bop it over the fence.
Right. You're 100% right.
Yeah. So maybe more guys like, who are thrown out at second need to run back to first. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that's a more context specific situation. You have to be in that position. This one, it's like, just go for it. Same kind of thing. Yeah. Just go for it. I don't know.
All right. Maybe what's your next moment?
Maybe this is a, you know, this will be picked up on MLB Tonight.
There we go.
Or something. All right. So my next moment is a collection of a few moments that I wanted to highlight. It's about players playing out of position. And there's really one, I think, main example that I'm pretty sure that's what you have the video for. And that's what I'll focus on last. But I think it's always fun in baseball how, you know, sometimes these games are long and weird and, you know, you give up a lot of runs and you don't really have the pitching left. You got to bring in position players and, you know, you're running out of outfielders. You got to bring in an infielder, play the outfield. I mean, sometimes this stuff happens. It's a long season and the Yankees have had their fair share of weird player moments, players out of position. So many position players pitch today that I feel like the charm of that is kind of gone, which is unfortunate because that used to be a really novel thing where it's like, oh, so-and-so's coming in to pitch. Like, everyone turn on the TV. Now it's...
Yeah, like when Nick Swisher got to pitch in 2009.
Exactly. So I feel like Swisher was the first thing I thought of.
Yep.
Like, that pitching appearance in 2009. I mean, it's really fun to remember. He had a great time with it. I think it was a little controversial at the time because, like, he had so much fun. People didn't really know Nick Swisher. And
yeah, people didn't like that he was having fun while they were losing.
Yeah, so that was a little tough. But, like, I think in retrospect, it's aged a lot better. The two main ones, really, I'll start with the secondary one first, because this one happened in a loss. These are the two ones I really kind of stuck in my mind. Brian Mitchell playing first in 2017.
Joe Girardi attempted a Waxahachie swap.
He did, and it didn't work out for them. It didn't. Because Brian Mitchell ultimately gave up the lead. And
friend of the pod, Dom, not the Dom that we know, but the Dom that Matt Harris and I know, insists that this moment ruined Brian Mitchell's career.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can go that far, but in a weekend that was kind of weird for the Yankees, given the, I think that game was on our top games list, our wild games list, when they came back from the massive deficit on the Friday game against the Orioles.
Oh, yeah.
This game had a potential to get, you know, to that status, but Brian Mitchell gave up some runs late. Joe Girardi attempted the Waxahachie swap. He tried to move Mitchell to first and then bring him back into pitch. It worked at first, backfired. Mitchell had some trouble catching a ball. I think he was sent down the next day or something? I'm pretty sure he was sent down. So this was not the happy story, the one where you could laugh about it afterwards. And now we can, but in the moment, I don't think people were fans of what had happened. But I think the best moment to really take this spot comes from another Yankees A's game in 2011. And this game was notable for an entirely different reason, is the fact that the Yankees set the record for the most grand slams in a single game in Major League history. And they were trailing in this game. And
by a lot.
Robinson Cano, Russell Martin hit grand slams to put them ahead. They're trailing, it was five or six runs, and they came back, and I mean they were up by, you know, one or two in the fifth, and then they just kept pouring it on. And this game was, you know, Andrew Jones hit a home run in like the eighth. Legend. That was like, it's like 22
put him in the Hall of Fame.
At this point, the game is basically over, and people who had left that would have missed something pretty cool, because the Yanks had a new second baseman for the ninth inning.
And they had been waiting for this guy to become a second baseman for the better part of 20 years. And then he finally developed into one.
You'd say it's a player development victory to see Jorge Posada at second base in the final year of his career. And Jorge Posada at second base was crazy. I mean, like, he was loving it. Everyone was laughing. Do you have video for this one? Or
should we check out his adventure?
Let's check it out.
Yeah,
we see something that we've never seen before. Jorge Posada is going to play second base for the first time in his major league career, and it's the circle of life, or the circle of a baseball career, because Jorge Posada, when he started in the Yankee organization, started as a second baseman before the organization decided to switch.
Whipple, do you think the ball's going to find him?
A second baseman here. Baseball, you know, the Yankees winning 22 to 8. Always finds you.
There's a ground ball to Posada. How perfect. And he fires low, and a scoop by Swisher, and the game is over.
That might be like the perfect ending
to a perfectly outrageous day.
22-9, and the highlight might have been that final throw by Jorge Posada. And I think that is my favorite out of position moment. It had only good vibes. Posada was on his way out in his career. He had never done this before. It was kind of a chance to give a vet an opportunity. I mean, the situation was so perfect for it. And that final throw was just like, hold on, you know, hold on tight. Just hope it finds a glove. I think that is one of the wilder positional arrangements I've seen. And I'm glad it happened. I'm glad there was a situation, because things didn't end great with Posada and the Yankees. There was a lot of tension this final year, but that specific moment was really pretty fun.
That's a great one. And that game was so weird. Whipple, piece of trivia. When Brian Mitchell played first base in that game in 2017, he became the first Yankees pitcher to play a position other than pitcher in a game for them since who?
Is it Ron Guidry?
It's Ron Guidry playing center field in the resumption of the Pine Tar game.
I only knew that because I was doing research for this before.
That's fair. You think still, good trivia. So I think you're going to pick a moment from a game that you attended later on. I'm going to pick a moment from a game that I attended right now. So in 2018, the Yankees were working on a very good season in which they, of course, went on to win 100 games. And as part of that season, they were in the process of getting revenge on the Houston Astros, who had, of course, beaten them in the American League Championship Series in the prior year. So after taking 3 out of 4 from Houston in Houston at the end of April and the beginning of May, the Yankees hosted the Astros at the end of May. And in the Tuesday game, the second game of the series, a lot of cool stuff happened. I was able to see Aaron Judge hit a home run in person for the first time. I was able to see Brett Gardner have a multi-home run game. I got to see the two exciting rookies, Miguel Andujar and Gleyber Torres. And I also witnessed one of the weirder things that I had ever seen. So Brett Gardner's second home run of the game was a two-run shot in the bottom of the ninth off Chris Devensky to tie the game. In the top of the 10th, Aroldis Chapman was pitching. He got two quick outs. He then walked Tony Kemp. George Springer came up. Chapman threw a wild pitch, allowing Tony Kemp to advance to second base. So now we're starting to get nervous. Springer's a good hitter. There's a runner in scoring position. Chapman has shown that he's wild. You know, what are we going to do here? Don't want to relinquish the lead. It's the bottom of the order coming up. So, you know, they better get Springer, right? Well, in this weird moment, the Yankees were able to get out of the inning without getting George Springer at all. And this is how it happened.
Choo-choo. Right back to Sanchez. Fires to third. Got him.
I'm sensing a theme with your picks. I don't know what it is, but
you're sensing a theme. Okay.
A Gary Sanchez related.
There is in those a Gary Sanchez theme, sure. But so Aroldis Chapman basically throws an alley-oop off the backstop to Gary, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, straight past Gary, straight past the umpire, that bounces perfectly off the backstop for Gary to snag out of the air, throw to third for Andujar to tag out Kemp. Gleyber would walk things off in the bottom of the inning, and the Yankees would take another series from the Astros. But just an absurd thing, probably the weirdest moment I've ever witnessed in person, although I did see Joey Gallo hit a home run as a Yankee. I saw Joey Gallo hit two home runs as a Yankee. That's ridiculous. So some people would say that's weirder, but I think Chapman going alley-oop off the backstop to Gary to get a runner making the third out at third is tough to beat. I don't think they could replicate that play if you gave them 100 tries. It was such a wild thing to experience live, the swing and emotion as you saw the ball go past and then you saw Gary throw it to third was just ridiculous. And then, of course, they capped it off with a walk-off win. So another great game yielding a really weird moment for us here.
Yeah, I feel like that a perfect encapsulation of the Aroldis Chapman and Gary Sanchez experience.
Very much so.
Wild pitch. 100 miles an hour off the backstop, perfect throw. I mean, yeah, two players who definitely kept your heart in your stomach, but I can't imagine being there, especially given Yankees Astros. So definitely a great play, and more Gary in the rankings, the better.
Absolutely.
Speaking of, speaking of great plays and more of certain players in the rankings or certain teams, I'm going to go back to the 2012 well.
Say more Yankees on the list.
So I think when people think of Dwayne Wise and people think of Dwayne Wise's catches, they think of arguably, I mean, greatest catch in baseball history. I wouldn't argue. The Mark Burley
they at least game, right? They at least think of a ball he did catch. We can say that.
If you're gonna think of Dwayne Wise, you're probably thinking of that catch, and that's very fair. And this, you know, if this was a White Sox pod, if we were White Sox files, I feel like that might be a pretty weird moment, and maybe we talk about it in the same way we're talking about this stuff. But this is a Yankees pod, and Dwayne Wise was a Yankee, and Dwayne Wise made a quote unquote catch with the Yankees that was notable for other reasons, mostly for the fact that he didn't make the catch. And so in June of 2012, Dwayne Wise filling in the outfield for the Yankees in the later innings of a game against Cleveland, and a game that the Yankees won pretty handily. The final score was 6-4, but the Indians Guardians scored four runs in the ninth, so it really wasn't that close. More of the action was on the post-game reaction to what happened in the seventh inning when Phil Hughes threw a ball with a runner on third. The ball was popped up to left field, and the left fielder, Dwayne Wise, went in for the ball. And let's watch what happens next.
1-2. Popped up. Long run for Wise.
Oh, my.
And he makes the play.
Makes the catch. Right?
So they say.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He's got the ball and a little bit of a smile on his
got
face.
The ball. Usually if you have the ball, it's the catch.
Wise goes in the stands and
goes
holds
in.
On and then tumbles.
He holds on and tumbles.
Well, this is, you see that ball?
Oh.
No,
whoa.
He didn't catch him. I was going to say, I don't think
or
he
does
that
it?
Because it hit the heel of his glove.
Wow.
But he came out with it.
I love how like somebody each replay makes it so much more obvious.
Didn't catch it at all.
That is unbelievable. Phil Hughes, it's an out to him.
This is a group effort out of here.
Just every replay gets better. I mean, it's I love that video just because, like, you think, oh, great catch. And by the end, you're like, what is umpiring in baseball?
Yeah, at the end, it is absolutely unfathomable that he convinced an umpire looking at the play that he caught that ball.
So, I mean, afterwards, everyone was like, yeah, he missed it. I mean, I think, like, the Yankees' reaction was like, I mean, I saw it, right? Like, you're not going to give the game away, but it didn't matter. Like, I mean, it mattered a little bit, but in the grand scheme of things, didn't matter that much. But it's just one of those quirks of modern baseball that we're not going to, or sorry, quirks of pre-modern baseball that we're not going to get anymore, because if that happens today, you know where they're going. They're going right to the replay room and they're going to overturn that. So, I'm pretty sure replay, it was 2013 where they introduced expanded replay, right? If it wasn't 2013, it was like 2014. So this is like one of the last years of this like absolute blatant miscall being allowed to happen. I mean, I remember this one, and then in a more important game that year when Teixeira slid into first and was called out when he was safe and then just started arguing nothing they could do about it. So it's the little things like this, like of a different era, but this one is funny just because in such a kind of meaningless, low stakes game, it's such a blatantly missed call. And everyone, once you saw it, you knew. But a catch is a catch. And I think the backstory, too, is like
a catch is a catch. And sometimes not a catch is a catch.
I think they like interviewed the guy and like, you know, he got a little notoriety, just put the ball back in the glove. So,
yeah, why not?
Story all around. And definitely one of those things that will never happen again. But I'm sure glad it did.
Yeah, what an unusual thing, and I'm very thankful that we have replay now and can get calls right, but that is from the really one of the great moments of not having replay. On the topic of replay, the Yankees found themselves in a unique replay situation in 2023. It was April 12th. They were playing in Cleveland. And the rules of replay were probably not applied the way they were supposed to be applied in this game. in the, it was either the first or second inning, Aaron Hicks, it was the first inning, Aaron Hicks appeared to make two sliding catches. He really didn't make either catch. And in one instance, on a play that it was believed ended the inning, on a double play off of one of Hicks' sliding catches, they cut back to the game and the Guardians were still hitting. And how did that happen? Because the Guardians hadn't challenged the call. And it turned out that the umpires just gave Cleveland as long as they wanted to decide they could, or to decide to challenge the call on the field. They then challenged, it was overturned. Aaron Boone was very angry because there's supposed to be a time limit of how long you have to be able to decide that you'd like to challenge a call. But that's not the weird moment I've chosen. The weird moment I've chosen came later in this game. And I want to preface this by saying, I would never wish physical harm on an umpire who makes an incorrect call. I would not do that. I don't think anyone should do that. We need to accept that the fallibility of umpires is today a part of the game. There will always be judgment calls they get to make, and we'll have to accept that they won't make them all correctly. But just as the ball found Jorge Posada when he was playing second base, the ball found second base umpire Larry Vanover in this game in quite an interesting way to help the Yankees get on the board against Peyton Battenfield. And here is how that happened.
Fly ball deep center field, Strawback, still back, turning, and it's off the wall. Cabrera scores, IKF will go to third, and the throw hits the umpire Larry Vanover, and that will allow IKF to score, and
So I don't even know if I believe in karma. I think if I did, that went away when the Astros won the 2022 World Series. Plenty of good things happen to bad people. But in this case, I think we saw a classic instance of ball don't lie. And Higashioka hits a drive to deep center. Guardians are throwing it in. Jimenez, I believe it is, just hits Larry Vanover right in the head with his throw home. The Yankees score a run. They ultimately go on to win the game on some heroics, I believe, by Oswaldo Cabrera off of Emmanuel Clase, which is weird in its own way. But yeah, just, you know, an umpire who got what it turned out was coming to him in a game that he had already seriously impacted. He then impacted a little more. I think we can say his net impact was pretty neutral. And neutrality from umpires is really all we can want, right?
I thought you were going to say the weird moment was Higgy hitting a deep drive to center.
I could have gone with that.
Good God. Yeah, no, that you never want the umpires to be in the line of fire, but that was crazy. And given the context of what happened, I mean, that what a just freakish moment. And that's, again,
also
what you love
just
about
Cleveland biting the hand that feeds. What he had done for them already in that game, show some appreciation. Come on.
That's what you love about baseball. Like, it's like in football, if the referees were like in the like dog pile. I mean, like,
yeah.
How can you not be romantic about the sport where you can get hit by the ball flying in from center field that's going to cut down a run? So great,
ridiculous.
Great pick.
Ridiculous.
All right, I think I'm
your last pick. Last one.
All right, so I saved the most personal for last, probably the most random one that I've seen. The one that I've seen in person, the most random moment, and this one really was something else. And I think, just as you kind of had the reaction to the Gary Sanchez wild pitch throw out, that was, you know, it was an extra inning game against the Astros. I mean, the Yankees are fully like in this battle and the adrenaline is high. And I mean, what an exciting moment of baseball. This one was like, what a weird moment in a game that like people just kind of wanted to go home. I think there was some hurricane that was ripping up and down the East Coast, or was about to. So like everyone knew the next game was going to get canceled. I was driving to DC. I was moving there. So my dad and I were driving, and I think we actually first dad take or bad take might've been recorded like right around this time. So this was like early days of the pod, late 2021. The Yankees are on their 13-game winning streak. They're manhandling the Twins. We just, you know, we wanted to hop into the Bronx and see a game of baseball before I had to go move. You kind of knew the rain was coming, so we're like, all right, like, we'll get in. If it goes long, we'll leave. We get there in, like, the fourth, and, yeah, it's kind of – it's Yankees-Twins. I mean, it's not super exciting. The Yankees were up, like, 6-0. I think Cole – the other storyline of the game was Cole versus Donaldson that was still going on. So
freaking
out. Yeah, he struck out, I think, twice with the bases loaded. So it was all around a very enjoyable, like, dog days of August baseball game. Andrew Velasquez hit his home run. That was, like, what I think
Hell
was,
yeah.
would remember this for. So, like, kind of randomly a good game. But the moment that – I will never forget, came in the seventh inning. The Yankees are up by six runs already. They're up by six runs. Six nothing. Runners on the corners, one out. Ronette Odor, who at this point was, you know, fully polarizing, all or nothing. You know, he had his clutch moments. He really wasn't that good. But getting full playing time, he swings at a ball and hits a home run. Everyone thinks it's 9-0 in the crowd, or so we thought.
Or so you thought.
Two on four, Odor. Time called very late. Are you serious?
Like, actually, watching this live was way worse.
Time was called. That's unbelievable.
So this broadcast did a great job of pointing that out, because the reaction in the stadium was everyone thought that the Twins, like, took a home run away from him by challenging something. So he struck out after. And I have never been so confused. I thought I was like, that wasn't foul. Was something challenged? I mean, did the Twins, I don't know, did they call timeout? That's what I thought it had to have been. Like, there's no way the batter is calling timeout and then hitting a home run. And I'm on my phone, like, Dad, I think he called timeout. I'm like, you know what? That's, like, really fair that he doesn't get that. And I have never in my life, even the, like, worst calls that are for the Yankees against, I'm always going to defend the Yankees. Like, there is no part of me that's going to be rational and say it was their fault. But in that case, it really was Odor's fault. And there is no way around that. And the fact that he swung after the pitch was probably just kind of lobbed in is, like, the funniest thing. He confused 45,000 people who were ready to, like, hit the road on a Saturday afternoon, and definitely the most head scratching home run I've ever seen. We like to talk about how we always, like, keep counts of, like, which players have hit home runs at games we've been to. For Odor, I have one spiritual home run, because I saw him hit a home run.
You saw him during a game hit a ball over the fence in fair territory. Like, it's all there. It has all the ingredients.
I think that's the perfect way to wrap up, like, my part of the list, because a lot of the things I've talked about are, like, really intense games, like, crazy moments, exciting. And this last one was just like, you go to the ballpark and you're going to see something new every day. And that was the something new. And I will never forget that.
You never know what you might see.
Never know.
So in 2021, the Oakland A's were a pretty good team. They only ended up going 86-76. But at one point, they were 45-30. They were, like, winning games at quite a clip. And they came to Yankee Stadium in the middle of June with a 43-27 record and took the first game against the Yankees to go up to 44-27, which is really good. They were 17 games over 500. This was a good team. It's not important to the story that this was a good team. It's just weird that the A's were good that recently. So they were in a 2-1 game with the New York Yankees. The A's were trailing on Sunday, June 20th. And there wasn't really anything all that interesting about the way the runs had been scored. Jordan Montgomery had pitched a very good game. Gary Sanchez had a two-run double, which was also a weird moment. That was, he doubled, two runs scored, and then they were going to throw him out going to third, and he like didn't even like slide or anything, but Matt Chapman like caught the ball and fell over and missed the tag, and then he was safe at third, which is my favorite video to post when people post the Gary missing the tag against the Mets at home plate video. It's like, Matt Chapman won the platinum glove. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Or gold glove, whatever he won. He might have a platinum glove. Anyway, it's 2-1 Yankees, and they go to the bottom of the ninth, and OG Yankees Files readers will remember that early in 2021, Aroldis Chapman was untouchable. He was insane. Like, he was better on a rate basis than like that crazy Zach Britton season when Showalter left him in the bullpen to lose to the Blue Jays. He was like, his FIP was negative, I think, for like 2 months. It was crazy. But Aroldis Chapman came out to save the 2-1 game, and he started doing Aroldis Chapman things. By that, I mean he walked Jed Lowrie and he walked Tony Kemp. Tony Kemp weirdly showing up a lot in these. So there are runners on first and second. There's nobody out. Sean Murphy is up, and the Yankees only have one run lead, so like they can't allow anyone to score. They have not been scoring runs that day. If it wasn't for Gary Sanchez, they wouldn't have any. So like they got to do something to win this game. Now, the undercurrent here is back in May 21st, the Yankees turned a triple play. And then just 4 days before this game with the A's, the Yankees turned another triple play that was famously the situation at third base in, I guess that was in Buffalo, against Toronto. So the Yankees have turned these two triple plays. That's weird. Aroldis Chapman's untouchable, but he can't find the strike zone in this game. That's weird. Kind of a triple play situation. So screw a walk-off hit. Why not just get a walk-off triple play?
This could be 1-2 on the first. It's a triple play. They've done it again. 3 times.
So, first of all, Chris Gittens sighting. Shout out hard-hitting Chris Gittens. Second of all, put yourself in Michael Kay's shoes. It is extremely weird. Do you know what kind of situation you have to be in to have a ball get hit and your first thought be they might turn a triple play? Like, the Yankees had conditioned people to expect triple plays by turning, at that point, you know, 2 and 4.5, 4 weeks or whatever, and ultimately 3 in a month. That's nuts.
And I think the first one was like the same situation, just the Yankees were tied, so it didn't end the game, which is like even crazier within a month. Yeah. I just remember that game. I've seen a lot of baseball, and that might have been like one of the most like excited I've been after a game. Like, I was running around my apartment screaming. Like, that was so wild.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that is how a game ended. And the fact that it was their third triple play in a month, like, that doesn't make any sense. And we will, I'm sure, never see that again. But for the Yankees to turn three triple plays in a month and win a game on one, it's just absurd, ridiculous.
We haven't seen any since, and I'd bet that we won't see any for a while. It's just random baseball.
Probably won't.
I feel like all the Yankees triple plays that came in that stretch, or like that, what, like 3 years
when they kept turning them behind CC Sabathia? Yeah.
The year behind them in different locations. Ridiculous. That also, just completely random, one of my favorite games. Another kind of semi-weird thing in 2013, that triple play game, was when, I think in the top of that inning, or bottom of the inning, whatever, Adam Jones was in the field. He dropped a ball and I think led to 3 runs, or it was like a double over his head. Oh, and then man. He hit the triple play. And that was like, he was responsible for like that huge swing.
Tough inning to be Adam Jones.
Yeah, so good memories.
All right, Whipple. Good draft. I think, you know, this is really our bread and butter, is just getting into like remembering some guys, remembering some moments. This is always fun, especially here we are on the brink of spring training, just to be able to get like one more kind of fun nonsense thing in before we have to be, you know, all business talking about the 2024 Yankees or whatever. So this was a good time. I'm sure many clips from this will end up on Twitter because these are just ridiculously weird and unusual things. But it's time for us to wrap up this edition, this 99th edition of the Yankees Files podcast. Big one coming up next time. We could have a special guest. We could have an unusual structure. It could be your birthday. Who knows what might come for the 100th episode. But Whipple, as we get this one wrapped up, nothing has changed about the Yankees, really. I guess they made the Caleb Ferguson deal since we last spoke. I don't think we need to do confidence, but I do know that you have a parting shot that we can't miss.
This is a big parting shot. And
this is,
you know, if you're a baseball player, you're heading to spring training, you've been working out all offseason, and inevitably we see the best shape of his life articles. You know, that player, he's Vlad Guerrero is in the lab.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. is in the best shape of his life.
He's in the best shape. I promise you, this is his MVP season. I mean, he's on the cover of MLB The Show. Like, what can go wrong? And Alek Manoah, too. So, like, generally, you know, those might not often pan out. You know, sometimes they're good. Sometimes they didn't mean anything. Everyone's in the best shape of their life. But I can promise you, one, maybe not baseball player, but baseball adjacent doctor who is in the best shape of his podcasting life, who I think is on an early hunt for Yankees Files podcasting comeback guest of the year or most improved guest of the year. Doug Whipple is going for the award sweep, and we're not even in spring training yet. And for context, I'm planning to go down to spring training with my dad in a few weeks. So I called him the other day. I'm like, are you excited? You know, like, let's get the hotel to make sure we get the games. He's like, yeah, that's great. Oh, I'm reading this book too. I think, you know, it'll be awesome to talk about it during spring break. I'm like, okay, is it like, you know, I don't know. He's
reading
like
The Boys in the Boat or something.
Yeah, he's reading like the Tour de France magazine or something.
Sure,
or golf,
yeah.
You know, like golf swings. Like, no, it's a fan's guide to analytics, how WAR, WOBA, and like FIP can help you change your perspective by Anthony Kastrovich. I'm like, oh, Anthony,
how about that?
He's a reputable writer.
He's a real guy.
I look it up, and this is like, this honestly, he found the perfect book for him. It's like the fan's guide, the intro kind of starter level. I don't know if the guests of the pod, if that's the right book for them. I feel like a lot of our guests kind of know all this stuff, but if you want to get in at the ground floor, and Doug Whipple wants to get in at the ground floor.
Well, if you want to get in at the ground floor, the first thing you should do is go to yankeesfiles.com and read the stats article that I wrote. The second, because that's free, by the way.
And I might have to send that to him.
I think you will. The second thing you might want to do, if you trust Doug Whipple's recommendation.
So he's, again, you've all hopefully listened to Doug Whipple on the pod. He's an emotional guy. He loves the emotional, you know, elements of the season. He loves the
experience. He's a vibes guy.
He's not an analytics guy. I think we leave the like hard hitting criticism and stats to Mitch Harris. But
we do.
If this is any indication, Doug Whipple, again, we're taking it with a perspective of he's never really been into us. He starts talking about the win and how bad the win is and how pitcher wins don't mean anything, how the bullpen can take it away, how it's not representative, it's representative of the talent on the field, how Jacob deGrom was the first Cy Young where they were predicting, you know, they're using wins, not using wins to predict who the Cy Young would be, and how the writers weren't using wins to vote. And that's kind of been the movement. And so there's better stats like ERA or FIP. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, wow. Is this my dad? Like, is this
who are you and what have you done with Doug Whipple?
He's like, this is chapter one. I mean, I'm so excited to, we got WOBA next and WAR.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, yeah, that's great. I think you really enjoy this over the next few weeks. He's like, oh, I want to get this done. I'm working tomorrow, but like Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to try to read this whole thing. And so I don't want to say he's in the best shape of his life because Doug Whipple, he does his own thing. He will come on the pod and he charts his own course, but
he'll say whatever.
He'll say whatever. But if you're looking for a candidate for an early season preseason prediction as to which recurring podcast guest might take the biggest leap in terms of contributions, in terms of knowledge, in terms of what he brings to the Yankees Files family, I would encourage you to circle Doug Whipple on your sheet, and I will keep you all in the loop. But the signs are encouraging. I didn't know if this was possible, but we can't deny that Doug Whipple is in the best shape of his life.
Well, hey, I think we'd all be very excited for Doug Whipple to be the most improved contributor to the Yankees Files podcast this year. I think that would be a great service to us all. I'm very excited for the new, like, Doug Whipple 2.0, who is all into analytics.
I was taken aback, but
I'm shocked.
This Doug Whipple, I think if he finishes that book and I think he's ready, I might set him up with the Yankees Files starter pack. I mean, the sky is the limit.
Yeah.
For a dad take or bad take in 2024.
That's right. And I know I was talking to my parents the other day. I know my dad has a lot of takes and he's ready to come back. So I'm sure we'll get one of those soon. My parting shot will be for Doug Whipple, in fact, because I know he's going to get to WOBA in his book and he might even learn about ex-WOBA soon. 2022 ex-WOBA was a better predictor of 2023 WOBA than 2022 WOBA was. Expected stats were more predictive than realized stats for year-over-year performance. I think that should give us an insight into the reliability and the validity and legitimacy of the expected stats, and it should allow me to post more propaganda that makes the boomer fans angry. So that's probably what I'm going to do. Shout out to ex-WOBA. If you want to predict what a player's WOBA will be in 2024, and your choices are, I should guess it is his 2023 WOBA or his 2023 ex-WOBA, choose his 2023 ex-WOBA. Also, Pecota loves the Yankees. The Fangraphs playoff odds love the Yankees. Zips doesn't love them as much, but I don't care because it's 50% of the Fangraphs playoff odds, which love the Yankees. It's projection season, baby, and people love the Yankees, and I love the Yankees, and this team has like a 1 in 12 chance of winning the World Series, and that's what it's all about.
Love the Yankees, baby. Let's go. I like how this goes from like stat nerd heavy to just like New York sports talk radio, like very quickly.
Well, I still finish it off with just like the fractional statement of the percentage chance that Pecota and Fangraphs are giving them to win the World Series. So
there we go.
We landed where we started. Anyway, people can follow us on Twitter where we're at Yankees Files. They can visit us at yankeesfiles.com as well, especially if they want to check out that stats article. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcast with the added bonus of video, which is going to be especially important for this episode on Spotify. If you enjoy the podcast, we hope you'll rate, review, and subscribe. If you don't enjoy it, we still hope you'll subscribe and download and listen to it, but we hope you don't post publicly about how much you dislike it on the internet. We are on YouTube where we're at Yankees Files Podcast. Again, video especially important for this episode, so please check us out on YouTube. We think you'll enjoy it there. We're also on TikTok. We're at Yankees Files Podcast. So keep up with us. Come follow us. It's going to be a great season. We're going to have a ton of content, doing a lot of fun stuff here as Yankees Files reaches its 100th episode next week. About next week, next 2 weeks. We'll see when it gets posted. And look, spring training is right ahead of us. It's baseball season. It's actually college basketball season. And we'll be back same time, same place here pretty soon. Until then, let's go Yankees.